Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Founders Grit sponsored by Gaper.io. I am Zanara Baskhan and joining me today is Candace Elliott Brown. Welcome to the show, Candace.
Hello.
Candace, I see that you're a published author as well. You have written two books, that to science fiction, and the third one is under process. Well, I must say that is pretty impressive, and the books are obviously added to my reading list.
Well, don't be too impressed with writing. I mean, a lot of people write, it doesn't mean that they're great at it, but I'm trying.
Well, science fiction, I think, growing up, I've read a lot of science fiction books. I've seen a lot of movies. So for me, I think it's a big deal. Not everyone can write. That's a huge deal.
Well, to me, the writing was a way of expressing a lot of ideas that I wasn't able to develop in my own lifetime. I believe that there's a great future for humanity, and so I wanted to express that. Also, I got tired of hearing all these, dour predictions of, gloom and doom. So I wanted to show a world that was going to be a better world for people in the future.
Well, that's very impressive. Okay, should we begin?
Please.
Okay, share a brief background of yourself and your work experience, please.
Sure. I grew up in Silicon Valley. And when I say that, I don't mean just simply that I was in physically the same place. I mean, I used to hang out with this girl named Patty back in junior high. Patty Jobs had this older brother named Steve. Yeah, that's Steve. So I grew up in the same exact neighborhood, in fact, the same crowd as many of the people that developed the personal computer at Apple. The whole milieu that I grew up in was most of my friends were interested in tech. They were interested in science fiction. In fact, the club that I belonged to while in high school was called the Los Altos Science Fiction and Fantasy Association, and we were the largest club on campus. So, it was a techie, geeky type of world that I lived in and grew up. And then I took on various jobs. My first job was as a secretary at a high-tech company. Didn't like being a secretary, became an electronic assembler. That wasn't so much fun either because it wasn't a good pay. So I became a technician and then an engineer and then a manager and then eventually started up several companies of my own. So that's it in a nutshell. Of course, that's not the totality of it. What really mattered was, that along the way that I was meeting a lot of people, hearing a lot of good ideas, seeing a lot of interesting tech being developed and had a hand in some of it. And so that was a lot of fun. But also what I really loved all about that was I loved being with smart, energetic people. And I loved being a teacher and a manager. And so that's what I focused on, becoming that manager and that entrepreneur, working with people.
Well, very interesting that you actually lived next door to Steve Jobs.
Well, I wouldn't quite say next door, but certainly in the same neighborhood. Yeah, and I did visit his house when he was, when he was in high school. He was a senior when I was a freshman in high school. Let's put it that way.
Very impressive. Very impressive. Okay, has been your experience with remote employment, both as doing the work remotely yourself as well as employing remote workers?
Sure. Over the years, we saw more and more teams that were dispersed. The idea was that you'd have teams in various parts of the world. For example, when I was CEO of Nuvoyance, we had a team in the wine country where I live, a small team there. We had another team in Silicon Valley and a team in Israel. Because we were literally spread all over the planet, we were also working with clients such as Samsung, who would also be working on some of the same projects. And so we literally were working around the clock to develop the first software and then turn it into hardware. We were developing chip cores. Are you familiar with a chip core?
No, I'm not.
Okay, let me explain. Chip cores are the stuff that goes inside of an integrated circuit. Not every integrated circuit is all designed as one piece. Instead, you'd find different teams that would design specific parts of the chip. and then those chips would be married together, not unlike blocks of software. In today's world, hardware is designed much like software. You first design everything as algorithms. You turn that into one form of software and you test it in that software. Then you turn it into another piece of software that simulates what will happen inside of an integrated circuit. And you test and make sure that's running and working. Unlike a lot of software stuff where you can have a scrum that lasts only 2 weeks and then you test everything. And then if things don't work well, you get to fix it in the next scrum session. In making integrated circuit cores, you have to have it work at every level, period. Because the turnaround time for the next chip, the next time it goes actually into products, might be 18 months. So if you make a mistake, you've got a mistake that sits around being a problem for the customer for over a year and a half. So it's got to be right. It's got to be done right the first time. And you cannot make a mistake and have it ship.
I certainly am learning a lot from you today. Thank you for all the knowledge.
So that's why, you know, you have to organize the teams in a very specific way to be able to make sure that mistakes don't occur along the way. So you have these remote teams. Now, you're talking about remote people. Think of remote people as being like a mini, mini, mini micro team, you know, like atomized down to the single individual. You have to still have the mechanisms to make sure that each person's work is fitting to the project's goals, but also has very low mistakes. Now, if it's just software and you can do another turn within a couple of weeks and do a release and a push out to the customer, maybe it doesn't make as much error or as super problem. You know, people complain for a few weeks, your reputation gets hurt, but you fix it. Imagine that's not going to happen when you have a chip. You've gotten a major PR disaster if it's in your cell phone. By the way, I should explain, the technology that we were developing was for color flat panel displays. We were developing chip cores that did digital signal imaging for unique layouts of displays called Pentile Matrix. If you go and look online, if somebody wants to look that up, they can see that. It's a very unusual way of designing the color flat panel display. And it's totally dependent upon these algorithms that are in those chips. So it was a lot of interesting work to keep essentially three different teams all in sync. And the way that we did it was that I mapped people from their skill sets and the type of projects they were working on one to one. And then I had people literally using Zoom calls at least once a week and email at least once a day constantly. This kept the projects pretty much on track with each other. Plus they would then report at the end of each week, you know, what had gone on. And I still try to bring some of the teams together on periodic basis. Some of the team we would get together at least once a week in person, if it was possible. If not, then we'd do, you know, other groups of teams. For example, getting together with the Israeli, the Korean, and the California teams, we'd all get together, say, in Korea or in California, at least once a quarter to go over the project plans and assign tasks and negotiate responsibilities.
What has your takeaway been from such an experience, if at all?
Well, my take is, it's interesting. You mentioned the science fiction books that I wrote. I've also written other books, nonfiction. One of the books that I'm currently writing is about creativity and innovation. And there's a thing that we always talk about in creativity and innovation. It's called synergy. Synergy is what can be lost when you don't actually meet each other on a day-to-day basis or hourly basis. When you have remote teams, they can do their work. And in fact, they can be even more productive in that they don't have distractions. But you lose that potential for synergy in that if you have a little problem, you're stuck with it until you fix it. But you can't really just say, you know, I'm having a little problem to your office mate and say, what do you think of this? And the person says, oh, why not fix that? And instantly it's done. Other times, wow, that's a really hard problem. Why don't we all get together and kind of, you know, come up with an idea that might solve it? That doesn't happen very often when you're having an atomized down to the individual level remote workers. And it slows down that creativity, that spark that happens, because they just don't have the water cooler effect, you know, where you mention things in passing in the hallway or at the water cooler or during the lunch break. So today what we need to do is fix that problem. We need a mechanism so that remote workers are essentially connected to those people that are most likely to be able to help them break through any particular small problems that they have and be able to collaboratively work on the big ones and be able to identify those big ones and bring the teams together. Meetings online like Zoom and other things, the bandwidth is still not there. You still don't have a way of being able to just have that water cooler effect. So I see a big challenge there in today and in going forward. Someday maybe technology can fix some of these problems, but not yet so far. It'd almost be, you know, useful to have like a Zoom session that's constant, you know, constantly open, where you know, you're working along and you can simply highlight software and hit the button and say, hey, look at this one.
Okay, that's an interesting point of view. We even at Gaper, we do video calls that help us connect more. Like we do regular casual meetings on a daily basis. And yes, you're right. You're right. Your point of view is right. Okay. What do you think is the future of remote employment? What do you think needs to be done differently to make it even better and more effective?
Well, we need to have a new kind of, okay, let me back up a little bit. One of the things that I've seen with remote employment is the expectation that you're going to be constantly working on the particular thing and only that particular thing. I think that a wise program manager would also literally schedule a bit of downtime where we socialize with our other remote workers on the same project or even across projects to get that synergy. So say, you know, and when you're working for a startup company, you have things like the beer bust Friday, you know, where after five, you know, everybody says, no, stop, knock off. We're not working till midnight tonight. We're going to go and, you know, have a decent time with each other over at the tea, you know, thank goodness it's Friday. And you know, let off some steam, but also ends up having a lot of shop talk. That's just the way it works. I think that if you schedule that kind of time with everybody else, then you'll make the remote workers more effective. They'll feel more comfortable contacting others on the team to get ideas and solutions, share problems, and to possibly create that magical spark that we just don't know what it really is, called synergy.
What is the story behind your setup, and what has the journey been like for you? Any ups and downs, any hurdles?
Well, you know, I could talk about my personal hurdles with trying to get some of these companies started, you know, raising funds, typical startup stories, you know, where you're taking this weird idea. I give you an idea. When I first started Clairvoyant, the company before last, I was trying to raise funds. I was at a what they call a beauty contest, a venture capital presentation where you get about 15 minutes to do your pitch up on a stage, and everybody, you know, then gets to meet and talk to you, you know, meet and greet later. There was a reporter there who then wrote in the Red Herring and described my company as not much more than a white paper and a computer simulation. And it was absolutely true that that's about where we were at the time. And a lot of people didn't believe the technology that I was trying to talk about and raise funds to develop would actually work. Fortunately, there were smart people that could read that white paper and could read the could see the actual simulation and see that, in fact, we could do what we said we did. And those included the Asian manufacturers who needed the technology that we were talking about. But it still took me over a year to be able to pull all of that together. And during that time, actually, we talk about remote workers. I didn't have an office. I was using my kitchen table. The people that were trying to, you know, I was trying to pull together as my team didn't have an office to go to. They were, and some of them also still had day jobs. So we were all working remotely. This is in 2000. And of course, it was all by email and phone calls. So I essentially ran an all remote organization to pull together our team for about a year. We would only get together occasionally for a lunch down at the sushi restaurant. That was convenient to all of us.
In the current situation, due to the ongoing pandemic, many companies have been forced to go remote, even educational institutes. In a situation such as this, what are the major roadblocks and challenges?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm semi-retired. I'm still working for a number of outfits as an advisor to several small companies and venture capital funds. But I haven't left the grounds of my house except to go to the doctors and run a few small errands like that. So I'm completely dependent upon being a remote advisor at the moment, you know, because of this COVID-19. I'm in a high-risk group. I've got, I'm older. I've had a few interesting health issues. We don't need to go into those, but you can well imagine that I'm at higher risk. And so I take very strong pains not to go out and expose myself during this time. And a lot of older workers are doing this, especially. You know, they're trying to keep themselves safe. So this pandemic has certainly pushed us to the limit on what we can do with being remote. Zoom calls, telephone calls, email, all those things to keep us connected. But I definitely see that there's weaknesses in doing so. We definitely lack that spark of synergy that comes from just being able to hang out. And I wish I had an absolutely, great solution to fix it. I don't. I can only, work around them as much as I can.
Moving towards the last question. There are companies like Gaper that help develop, build, and scale products, especially for startups. How important do you think such setups are in the startup world and for founders looking to quickly hire smart?
Well, there's a how to back this up and say this. There's a certain risk in trying to hire people who are going to work remotely. You're dependent totally on their reputation. So when you're looking to hire people, you really need to have a reputation platform, one that really can tell you, do these people perform? Can they perform? It's not just simply hiring people and being able to look over their shoulder, because they're not going to be able to look over their shoulder while they're doing this work. You're going to be looking at the end product over some period of time and judging. So when you're a startup, you can't afford to have made too many mistakes in hiring. If you make too many mistakes in hiring, you're going to be losing time. Your time advantage is lost. That's and you're burning capital, burning through your investment capital. So it's going to be really, really critical to have that high confidence in the hires that you make. And so a reputable company that can do that reputation checking for you would be invaluable.
Thank you for joining us today, Candace. I'm hating it right now. I don't want to end this call. Like, I got to learn so much from you, and I just want to keep on talking, asking questions, because you have so much to share. And I just want to learn and learn and learn. But sadly, we have to end it. We actually had longer episodes in the pre-COVID times. But since the pandemic, everyone has been producing so much content. Our marketing team suggests we keep it short.
I understand. But you could always email me and ask for a time that would not be something for a podcast, if you'd like. Certainly, we get much more interesting stories than these.
Oh, definitely, definitely. That I'm definitely going to do that. Well, thank you once again, Candace. Have a great week. And cheers. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Is Candace, we're back online. Please share what you shared with me off call.
Sure. I wanted to ask you, what cell phone do you have?
I actually have an iPhone.
Which type?
iPhone X Max.
Wow. Well, it turns out that you right now are using the technology that my team and I at Clairvoyant and at NewVoyance developed for Samsung. And Samsung supplies the displays, the color flat panel displays, to that particular Apple product.
Well, you just keep on impressing me. Every second, every word that comes out of your mouth, my mind's blown. Like, whoosh. I don't know. You're amazing, man. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. Well, it was a long time work. I actually took about 20 years to develop that technology. And a lot of people thought that it couldn't work when I first started on it. But, you know, we proved to them that it would. And it saved them a lot of problems to use this technology. It's called Pentel Matrix. And somebody can Google that and we'll find out how it works and just how different and strange and yet amazing that it works. It is.
Well, every time I open my phone now, I'll be for sure thinking of you. I talked to the creator of this phone. Amazing.
Well, not the phone, but the display.
The software, yes.
Yeah, it's the
Amazing.
display. It's